Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
The filmmaker Penny Lane has always managed to find something novel in her documentaries. Not just the subject, but the approach she takes. Like the appeal of Satanism, the appeal of Kenny G, a story about Richard Nixon told through Super 8 home movies. In her latest, she gives her kidney to a stranger. And let me just let that sink in for a second. Penny gave one of her kidneys to a complete stranger. This is a thing, of course. They're called non-directed living donors or altruistic donors. And it's important to say she didn't do it as a stunt. This was something she'd planned long before the film. But the process and the questions it all raises are kind of perfect for a documentary. Like the part Penny describes as the decision point.
You could say, I'm going to give my kidney to a stranger. I don't know who yet, but I'm going to pick someone. And there's ways to do that. Like there are entire websites where people who need kidneys kind of register and they create kind of like a social network style profile. And then you could sort of pick someone off that list.
The idea of scrolling through the profiles and saying who is most deserving of this gift of my kidney. I presume a lot of that is that you want to control the unknown. You want to be able to feel confident that the person that's received your kidney is like someone that you think of as a good person. I guess I do understand that, but I don't even have a therapist because I don't invite complicated relationships into my life. And so to me, it feels like the potential of like some complicated relationship with a recipient just seems like not something I need. I'm perfectly willing to imagine that somewhere in the world there's a person whose life is improved, and that feels very satisfying to me.
But I was very adamant from the beginning that I wanted it to be truly anonymous. That for me was like the more, I guess, morally interesting exercise. Like, you know, why burden someone with a sense of obligation? Why have someone have to try to say thank you when you can't really ever appropriately thank someone for saving your life? Just let it go. Like, just let it be a free, anonymous gift from the universe, you know? But a surprising number of people, to me, a surprising number of people would say, but what if it's a bad person?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the device you use in the film to give people an image of someone they may not agree with. And this is a guy named Nelson Gibson. He's a real guy. Has bad kidneys. He goes through dialysis. And he takes with him when he goes, well, an increasingly large series of cutouts of Donald Trump. He's a Trump guy.
Nelson Gibson says he spends about 3.5 hours a day, 3 days a week, undergoing dialysis. His family is not allowed to sit with him that long, so when he first started getting treatments, he brought an 8x10 photo of President Trump to comfort him, and he says no one complained. He then started bringing a miniature cardboard cutout of him standing next to a photo of the president, and again, no one complained. But when he returned for treatment Tuesday, he brought a life-size cutout of the president. He says the mood changed.
They told me it was too much.
It's a really good joke.
It's a good joke, but it does take people to the place where, do I want my kidney going to someone I don't agree with politically?
Yeah. And also, like, it is different for different people. I mean, there are people who go and give a kidney and they're like, I want to make sure my kidney doesn't go to a racist, or, you know, doesn't go to a religious group that I feel is bad. Like, there are people that do make all kinds of choices like this. The whole point for me, and I say this in the film, is that that's like everyday life. That's what we do all the time.
We have plenty of opportunities in our life to decide who to be nice to, like all day, every day. We make choices about like what someone looks like or how they voted or whether they like to read books or like the same music as you. This just feels like blessedly separate from that. That's what feels good about it. Like, I don't get to do that. I don't want to do that.
I wanted to do like hard mode. And so, yeah, so as much as I have no idea who got my kidney, I sort of liked to imagine that it might be someone who I might not even like enjoy on a personal level. Mm. And I'm so sorry to this poor man who's a real person who I've picked on as my like example in this movie, but I needed something. He'll probably love it. He'll be like some like anti-Trump person.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Penny Lane's film is called Confessions of a Good Samaritan, and it's the latest film in our documentary series, our partnership with Utah Film Center. We're going to be screening the film next week and talking with Penny afterward. We'll have details here in a moment. We spoke earlier this week, and Penny told us, wouldn't you know it, a decision like this is complicated.
Every documentary needs a kind of a mystery that you're trying to solve. The mystery of this film from the beginning was, why is it that, you know, you put 100 people in a room and you give them all the same, like, little piece of information, this little PSA, you know, like, the need is this big,
yeah,
you know, the risks to the donor are this small. Why is it that so few people have the response like, oh, yeah, sign me up? And so for me, that was the mystery of the film. So if it was like, oh, she was trying to come up with ideas for a movie and then came up with this, it would just destroy the entire purpose. Like, for me, it was like, why is it that every altruistic donor I've ever talked to, ever, still to this day, describes the experience of deciding they want to do this the same way, which is, oh, it seemed like an obvious idea. People say things like no brainer or like obvious or immediate or like, of course. Why? What is different about the internal workings of a person who has that reaction versus the most people, the normal people who don't have that reaction? And that was the mystery of the film that I wanted to explore. That was like the whole reason that the film came to exist, was that I wanted to try to understand different ways you might answer that question.
You mention in the film that you weren't exactly sure just when it occurred to you, but the idea, but that this is how you put it in the film, that it was definitely something I wanted to do. Like, like, no doubt. Like, what do you mean? What you've always thought about it? You immediately knew?
No.
Like, it was, there's no doubt?
I've never thought about it.
Huh.
No doubt at all. But I'd never thought about it. I didn't know it was an option. I mean, most people don't know. I'm sure most of your listeners right now are unaware that there's this thing that one can do.
Yeah.
One could choose to just go to a transplant center and say, I have an extra kidney, like, give it to whoever needs it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I always dreamed of doing that because I'd never heard of it. As soon as I heard of it, I was like, that's something that I could do and would like to do and should do. And I guess the way I describe it, another great mystery of the film, is that I don't think we know why we do anything, frankly. But I think we're very good at coming up with culturally accepted post hoc arguments that explain essentially our mysterious impulses. And so when I think about things that might be comparable to what I did, you might compare altruistic kidney donation to, yeah, like a person who's like, you know, walking down the street, minding their own business, and they see a house on fire and they hear someone screaming for help and they run in to save that person. Nobody ever asks them later why. like you're not like, well, of course you understand why. I mean, somebody was going to die if I didn't intervene. Somehow, perhaps, this idea of this abstract stranger who needs a kidney might have impacted me psychologically in that way.
Yeah.
Where it just felt like as if I saw somebody, you know, drowning in a river or burning in a house, and I just made the decision to go save them. Of course, the difference is that it took like another year and a half to get to the point where I had the surgery. Plenty of time to have doubt later. But the initial impulse was, there was no doubt at all. The other thing you could compare it to is choosing to have a child. And I'm a woman, so maybe this is like personal to me. But, you know, when someone decides they want to have a child, they're essentially choosing to, you know, use their body to extend life to another person who essentially will be a stranger, an unknown person. And, you know, people don't really ask you why, because we just sort of accept, like, that's a thing people do for normal reasons that we, you know, expect. So I think those are two comparisons I sometimes make to try to help even explain why the question why feels strange to an altruistic donor.
You also talk about, early on anyway in the film, how you just had this feeling that even though you, an earlier part of your life, you'd gone through some rough stuff, but you had arrived at a point when you were feeling like the luckiest person who ever lived, like really blessed. Take us through that part, how you felt like it's like you kind of felt like you kind of, I don't know, owed something to the universe. That seemed to be part of how you were thinking about it.
Absolutely. I do think that people who feel gratitude for life, for their own life, like tend to be more generous. I feel it myself when I'm feeling frightened or like my own survival is under question. I don't feel particularly generous. I feel quite like protective of myself, like hoard those resources. I need them. So, yeah, I think for me, it was just like, you know, I grew up fairly precarious. And so my sense that I was safe or that life was safe was pretty dicey for a long time. And so once I was kind of like well into my adulthood and I felt like, oh, like I'm okay. Like it's not like I'm like some kind of millionaire, but I'm okay. Like I'm probably not going to like die alone on the street homeless, you know. I think I started to like, look around and feel like, oh, it's time to sort of give back.
One of the really interesting parts of the film is how your feelings about the idea of giving your kidney to a stranger changed or evolved. You know, the morality of it, the attitude you had about it, they change in really interesting ways. And we'll get to sort of where you end up to some degree, but let's talk about where you were when the project began. How are you thinking about this when all of this began? And we can compare it later to how you where you ended up.
Well, I think I thought, like, as I mentioned before, the idea that I would do this felt so obvious and so like a no-brainer and a given that I felt quite like confident about it, like almost cocky. Like, but yeah, I was quite confident and I was a little bit evangelical about it. Like I was like, I want people to know about this and I want people to know that it's like an idea that could be pursued. It's more doable than they think. And so I was talking about it a lot, you know, and becoming a little bit defensive about the ways that sometimes people reacted negatively to it. But yeah, kind of like a little more aggressive, a little more confrontational. At least this is how I shaped it in the film, Doug. Yeah. There's a little movie magic there.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I figured.
I mean, a little bit. Yeah, you know, it's all true, right? But like, I had softer moments, I'm sure, at the beginning. But that was how we shaped the character at the beginning. And by the end of the journey, once she's kind of been through it all and, you know, it turns out that I'm terrified of surgery, which I didn't know because I had never had surgery before. And I had quite a lot of fear and anxiety and just kind of meltdowns like leading up to the surgery. And, you know, when people ask what's it like to give a kidney, I would just ask, like, what's life like? Like, it's, you know, are you the kind of person who gets really anxious? You might get anxious about this, you know, or maybe you're chill and you take everything in stride. That's probably how you'll experience this, you know. I found it quite hard, a lot harder than I anticipated it being. So when I came out of surgery and kind of in the months and years afterwards, I felt more understanding of why it's more complicated than I was giving it credit for at the beginning. It's harder than I thought it was. Still not as hard as most people think it is, but harder than I expected. And just very emotionally complicated and intimate and strange and spiritual. And at least the way I did it, I came out the other side having really put myself through the ringer in terms of questioning my own motivations, questioning my own reasons for doing this, questioning, you know, again, the doubt, like, should I be doing this? Maybe this is a stupid idea. Maybe I should back out, all that stuff. It was just like really, it was kind of a difficult experience. It was also a difficult experience because I was making this film about it. And that meant that I had to look at all this stuff that maybe in real life you would push aside and sweep under the rug, but I was engaged in this like character journey, essentially. So I had to pay attention to like all the stuff that was creating conflict inside of me.
So you work through the reasoning for people who make this decision in the film. You say, you know, as you said before, it kind of feels like math. It just seems logical. Mm-hmm. But it turns out, you say, people, the word weird comes up a lot. People find it weird when they hear someone is giving their kidney to a stranger.
Yes.
You say that. It seems weird. We mm-hmm. sort of concede it. Just it's weird. Will you talk a little bit about that? Why do we think it's weird? Where is that coming from, that idea?
Well, it's pretty interesting because, like, it is kind of like a lot of people's first reaction is kind of like, what's the catch?
Yeah, yeah.
I think what ultimately makes it weird, and, you know, this is a new technology.
Yeah.
At every stage of development of transplantation, our moral and ethical reasoning around what is weird or normal is adjusted. When we first started being able to transplant kidneys, it had to be between identical twins. That was the only way that it would work because we hadn't yet worked out the immunosuppression technology.
There was a surgeon, Joseph Murray.
We knew that in identical twins, you could have successful grafting. The skin would survive. But we never dreamed that we'd find an identical twin, one dying of kidney disease and another one willing to give a kidney.
It was like, we can actually do the first, you know, organ transplant.
You're going to see a man voluntarily jeopardize his own life to save the life of his brother.
And you think now, like, well, twin, brother, of course a twin will give their kidney to their twin. I mean, that's like, you would not necessarily expect that, but you wouldn't think it was weird, would you? Like, it's just like, of course this twin would, you know, sacrifice their kidney for their twin. But at the time, it was a huge controversy, and all the papers and all the medical journals were fighting and arguing about whether it was morally acceptable mm-hmm. for this twin to go through this level of risk and sacrifice for his twin. And then at every stage of that progression of this technology, with the same debates occurred, but like one further step out. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's like now it's mothers and fathers, and now it's cousins, and now it's, you know, distantly related people, and now it's strangers, like full on strangers. And I think that there is something about the stranger that is central to understanding this whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's a line. There's a line there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the same as giving a kidney to someone, even someone you know casually.
Yep.
With, yeah. Like an acquaintance is still very different from a stranger. The idea of what we are obligated to do to help a stranger at expense to ourselves is pretty muddy. I mean, the answer is almost nothing, kind of. Like, you know, it depends on the context, but most people kind of think, on average, nothing, like, is what I owe the stranger.
Well, I think it's really interesting the way you write about the history of our, you know, the kind of ethical, moral, religious debate about it all, which you get into in the film. You yourself sort of describe it as a history of the potential and the evolution of norms.
Yes.
And there's this great clip you have about a debate they're having over the ethics of all of this in Great Britain. And there's the conservative British writer and satirist Malcolm Muggeridge.
It is a feat which makes medical history, no matter how short the further survival of the patient might be. Do you agree with that?
How are we going to deal with the inevitable fact that this operation is here, and thank God for it, and that it will be performed in great numbers?
Man is made in the image of God. Now, I wonder what the fury of heaven would be at the notion that our bodies are collections of spare parts. All their hands are here.
There is at least one transplant patient in this audience. Shouldn't they have a right to say what they think about it instead yes. of us deciding whether they should be transplanted yes. or not?
Would the transplant patient make himself known? Is it you, madam?
All I can say is I'm very grateful for my spare part.
So talk a little bit about that, because there's been this evolution about how difficult it was to sort of work through all of this.
Yeah, but I would only push back by saying that it is still difficult to work through this.
Yeah,
the ethics and the morality of organ transplantation is still controversial.
Yeah.
It's still controversial. And, there are still a lot of people who feel that it's a violation of whether it's their sense of purity, like God made me this way, or their autonomy, like my body is my own. Like, it's a violation to them, the idea that you would cut them open and rip out their organ. And who can blame them? I mean, that's a perfectly defensible thing. I think if you have that feeling, you probably shouldn't give a kidney. You know, obviously, I don't feel that way, right? But a lot of people do. And I think it's a mistake to assume that we've now reached this, like, you know, sort of ethical stasis with organ transplantation. It's still very controversial. And I always say, you know, very few people give a kidney to a stranger. It's in the hundreds each year in America. Maybe we're up to around like 450, 500 a year now, which is still not a lot of people. But all it's going to take, I mean, imagine one of those people dying, which, like, will happen eventually. Like, it's just a game of chance. Like, if, like, 1 in 11,000 or 1 in 14,000 people will die as a result of giving a kidney, then it'll happen eventually. And the first news story about an altruistic kidney donor who dies, I mean, that's probably going to be the end of the practice. Like, a lot of this is more based on chance and contingency and just, like, you know, who is looking to score points in Congress that day. You know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff like this that isn't as settled as we think it is. Like, these are really chance operations in many ways.
Penny Lane. Her documentary is called Confessions of a Good Samaritan. We're going to be screening it with the Utah Film Center next Wednesday night. Attendance is free, but you're going to need to RSVP. You can find details at radiowest.org. We'll take a break. Come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking with the filmmaker Penny Lane about her documentary called Confessions of a Good Samaritan, which is the latest in our film series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're going to be screening the film next Wednesday night. Basically, Penny Lane made a film about donating one of her kidneys to a stranger. And not as a stunt. This was a personal impulse that she shares with a lot of people. And there's a mystery in the film that she wanted to uncover, the mystery of human altruism itself, why some people make extraordinary acts of generosity and why others hesitate. And there's also a question at the heart of the film, just who exactly is your neighbor? Back to our conversation. Part of the film kind of examines how altruism kind of works in the brain. You talk to this psychologist, Abigail Marsh. She's a professor at Georgetown. And she talked about how it used to be thought of as, you know, if you considered something like this, it could be that it was considered you were actually insane. But one of the things that she talks to you about is that subset of people who would never even think about this, psychopaths, basically. She studies psychopathy. Will you talk a little bit about this part of the film? Because I think that there's the idea of a psychopath, and then who would never think about something like this, and what their brain looks like, their amygdala, because you sort of talk about this, and then whether or not the person who would consider this would want to do this is the inverse of that, is the mirrored opposite version of that. We talk about this part of the film.
Yeah. So Abigail Marsh was someone who had done quite a lot of work on people with psychopathy. As you said, people with psychopathy tend to sort of not feel a great deal of empathy and not exhibit strong sense of altruism toward others. That's one of the qualities that people with psychopathy have. In addition, they're notoriously quite fearless. They don't experience the sensation of fear the way normal people do. You know, their brains aren't normal. So Abigail did a series of brain scan tests where she determined that psychopaths, on average, it's not a diagnostic test. You can't scan someone's brain and say you have psychopathy.
Right.
So on a population level, on average, their amygdalas are smaller than average, and they're less responsive to images of people suffering, and particularly people that are fearful. It's an interesting finding. It's held up really well. It's replicated many times. So at some point in her career, she thought to herself, well, if altruism or empathy is like all other traits that we know about in humans, it's probably on some kind of bell curve where, you know, on one end of the spectrum, you have people that have like an unusually low quotient of empathy or altruism. And there, in theory, should be people on the other end of the bell curve right. that would have an unusually high, like, you know, sense of empathy or altruism. And she was trying to think of a group of people she could study to see if she could test her theory that maybe their amygdalas would look different and look anti-psychopathic. Mm-hmm. She came up with the idea of altruistic kidney donors.
Altruistic kidney donors, when they see a stranger looking frightened, their amygdala responds really strongly to that. Which is the opposite of people who are psychopathic, who show reduced amygdala activation when they're looking at fearful expressions. Altruistic kidney donors, their amygdalas are larger than the average person. They're no better than anybody else at recognizing when somebody else is angry or sad or disgusted. But they are better at recognizing when they're afraid. Empathy is registering or understanding somebody else's emotional state. And the idea is that empathy leads to altruism. But how do we get from, I understand your distress, to I care and I want to help make it better? That's the process we don't really understand.
And so I went to her lab and I had her scan my brain and we talked about what all that means. You know, if the mystery of the film is why are altruistic donors' inner experiences of the world so seemingly different than others, than normal people, you know, the size of the amygdala becomes almost kind of like a MacGuffin where it seems like it might be helpful to understand, but ultimately it doesn't really tell you very much, right? Like, what does that mean?
One woman you talked to in the film said the question isn't why to give, like why would you give, but it should be why not. And I wanted to ask you about that because it does raise a question of whether or not we all should, because of how, maybe easy is not the right way, but how the technology is there. It's new, but it's there to do it. Whether or not we should all feel obligated to do this.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I definitely... I personally don't think anyone should feel obligated to do this.
Yeah.
I feel like it is too intimate. It's too violative. Like, you know, it does violate this kind of like autonomous boundary between your body and the world around you. Like, it's just too personal. Hmm. It's like, again, I compare it in the film to the decision to whether or not to have a child. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't want to live in a society where people feel obligated to have a child or not have a child. I don't want to live in a society where people feel obligated to give a kidney or not give a kidney. Mm-hmm. Like, so I stay away from the word obligation, but I do appreciate the provocation of the question. Instead of why should I give my kidney? Why shouldn't I? I do think that's a good question. Why shouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, and there's real risks. Again, you always have to kind of try to be balanced. Like, you know, it's not a risk-free operation, guys. It's a major surgery.
Yep.
So in any major surgery, there's a chance of bad outcomes, of you know, not just death, but like other types of, you know, negative health outcomes. That's always there when you go under anesthesia, go under the knife. It's just very safe in the grand scheme of things, I guess. Like, it's because of all the screening you do, like very few people have bad outcomes from doing it. And they're just like very careful with their screening about who they allow to donate. Because if there's, again, as I mentioned before, you know, one bad headline can really stop the whole practice for a long time. So they really don't want bad outcomes. They don't want someone who is deeply mentally ill to give a kidney and then freak out about it. Like, that's not something that the transplant system wants ethically. And they definitely don't want it in terms of like PR.
As you get closer to the surgery, the film becomes, you become more vulnerable, more exposed. It seems to get more personal. And there's a moment where you go through this psychosocial evaluation in preparation. And you write in your, there's this journal or this sort of, you know, vlog that you have where you write about feeling scared about it. You say it's genuinely difficult to answer the question of why you're doing this. And then they're asking you questions like, have you ever been abused? And you're trying to keep it together because you feel this anxiety and you don't want them to think you're mentally ill and reject your kid. So would you just talk about this moment that you're going through? Did this part surprise you? Because this seemed really intense.
It did surprise me. It was very intense. And I'm sure it isn't for everybody, but just because of the nature of who I am, like there is a, you know, a history of mental illness in my family. Yeah. I was really scared that like they were going to screen me out right away based on that, which felt like something that would make me feel like, oh man, like, I guess I'm deficient or like I'm not capable of like, you know, giving back, like even though I want to, because somehow there's this stain on me. I was scared about that. And yeah, I was scared that they were going to ask me, why are you doing this? And that I would have all the same stumbling, you know, at the same way that everyone always asks me, why are you doing this? And I'm always like, I don't know. I don't think we know why we do what we do. And I didn't know if they'd like that way of thinking. Yeah. You know, I was so scared that I was just going to say the wrong thing and I was going to get screened out and that that was going to damage my self-esteem. That was the big, like the net, the circuit that I was afraid was about to get tripped, that my self-esteem would be damaged if they didn't like accept me. So I was very worked up about that. I was very scared. And yeah, it was just like, again, it was just more emotional and more intense than I thought. I didn't know they were going to ask me about things like, have you ever been abused? Have you ever been raped? Like, you know, it's stuff like that. They ask you these questions for good reasons because these are things that can make you vulnerable to feeling like your bodily autonomy is violated and all this stuff. Like, I get it, but man, it was just very intense. Yeah. And I knew that they knew that I had at times in my life struggled with depression. And I just was like, how close to the line was I? Like, I'm still haunted by that.
Yeah. And you were so honest about your thoughts, really candid. Like, there's this moment where you talk about how some of these kind of more selfish thoughts start to emerge. Like your thinking is when you go in to the transplant center that there's going to be a beam of light and there are going to be, you know, like rose petals throwing at you. And it didn't work out like that. And
like a red carpet.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone was going to, you know, standing ovation, like my heroes welcome. No, it was just like a standard medical procedure. I just went to the hospital and I did my stuff and the exact same amount of how much you like being in the hospital for all your reasons. That's what it was like for me. It was not a different type of medical experience. And that I think really did surprise me. But yeah, I was definitely trying to be honest about the fact. And that to me is so important because, you know, the whole time I'm doing this, I'm trying to remember why I'm doing it. I'm right. Like, there's this person out there, this basically a hypothetical imaginary person who's a real person, but to me, they're hypothetical and imaginary. And I think they are suffering. They are actually dying. And like, I am doing this so that they can live. But it was incredibly, anyone who's ever tried to practice the golden rule has never tried it because all of the armature of your psychology is there to tell you that you are the center of the universe, and your, you know, bad morning where you like spilled coffee in the car and stubbed your toe is worse. Truly, to your experience of the world, it's worse than some stranger dying of cancer somewhere in the world. So like, I was trying to include those moments to show that it's almost impossible to like put the needs of some stranger above your own all the time. You can't do that.
I think one of the insights you come to in the film is about the interconnectedness, the connectedness of humans, and all other human beings, but also other creatures, it seems like. The idea of giving your kidney kind of made you feel connected. Can you explain what you were feeling, how that came to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic in a way because it was this stranger. So I never had the chance to kind of, you know, look someone in the face or, you know, hug them or touch them or even just see them and think, okay, this is the person I'm doing this for. Which is, by the way, I think has a lot of potential for like very beautiful, important, or like emotionally fulfilling experience for a lot of donors. I just never had that experience. I denied myself that experience. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of ironic that ultimately I still felt through the doing of it, through the act, that I was, first of all, I was making myself into a sick person. Like I was sort of taking on some of the burden that someone else out there had been experiencing. I was making myself spend a lot of time in the hospital. That's not fun. You know, all this stuff. I was, you know, going through surgery, like in my case, completely electively, but, you know, a frightening experience. And all this stuff that I was doing was I was kind of creating the conditions where my empathy for someone else out there who's chronically ill was strengthened. I mean, I really, in some ways, went through a little bit of what that person might be going through their whole life. And then secondly, you know, you think about the fact that someone can literally cut open your body and rip out a vital organ and give it to another person and it lives on and it helps them to live. Like, what could make you feel more connected to like someone else, you know? So because it wasn't one person that I was imagining, it started to feel like, yeah, like this was like more like a small node in a larger network, in that all this obsessive focus on myself and my obsessive kind of focus on my own experience, which I had to do to make the film, needed to end, and that I needed to let myself become less important and I needed to become more just like another face in the crowd. Like that's like the Zen master enlightenment goal, right? Like you become less important. That's the goal. And so there were moments in this that I felt that. I felt my lack of significance and how I was just one more little node in this like infinite network of nodes. And I include, you know, all living things in that network, not just humans.
Penny Lane, we're talking about her documentary Confessions of a Good Samaritan, which we're going to be screening next Wednesday at the Utah Film Center building in the Marmalade District of Salt Lake. We have details on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from our members. Find out how at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking with the filmmaker Penny Lane about her documentary Confessions of a Good Samaritan, where she explores why some people donate their kidneys to a stranger. She says she wanted to know what it is about the internal workings of a person who would do that, what it means to be good, what it means to be a neighbor. We're going to be screening the film next week, next Wednesday night. We'll have more details in a moment. Now, back to our conversation. After surgery, it made me realize just how exposed you were and how vulnerable you were. What was it like to see yourself in that condition, not just physical condition? I mean, you'd just gone through surgery, you're kind of a wreck, you know, but emotionally too. How?
Yeah.
What was that like to see yourself?
Yeah, I was a complete wreck. It was impossibly intense. I mean, you know, not a lot of people have extensive footage of themselves, you know, terrified in the weeks leading up to their major surgery, like, you know, terrified, tense, scared, freaking out. And then also footage of them being literally wheeled down the hallway post-surgery on a gurney, like out, you know, unconscious. I mean, I looked dead. I looked like a cadaver, you know, and then you wake up and I was sobbing and all this stuff. So I think that like all of that was incredibly intense, but I filmed around the surgery because I knew maybe there's something here. I only get to do this once, you know, I should film. And it was really looking at that footage of my bloated, unconscious body on the gurney, completely unconscious, dead to the world, that made me think, like, I need to make this film, because there's something about, like, what we do in documentary film is visual. It's a visual medium. And there are arguments that are made that you make without words. There are truths that we express that you can't express any other way. And I look at that image and I just think, like, this was a sacrifice. Like, I sacrificed something here. And I never had ever thought of it that way. And I would never have framed it that way. And my intellectual armature was not telling me to think of it that way. I saw the footage and I was like, this says everything. Like, this was hard because it's actually an incredible sacrifice. This is not like going to get your molars out. Like, this is a moral, you know, physical, spiritual, difficult task. And that's what you see in that image. It's really intense. And then it took me 18 months after that surgery before I could really do my final interview and finish the film. I had a lot more of the experience to process before I was ready to try to tie it up in a bow. I'm not even sure the film really succeeds in tying it up in a bow, but that's as close as I got after waiting another 18 months to do my final interview.
So the name for this, there are various names, altruistic donor, non-directed living kidney donor. One of them is Good Samaritan, which you say early on in the film, you're not crazy about that as a name for this. But you came around at the end, and it's an important part. I don't know if you want to give it away, but you come around to a different way of thinking about the, not the religious, but the kind of moral or ethical part of that story of the Good Samaritan in the Bible. Will you say something about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's right there in the title. The title is Confessions of a Good Samaritan. It's meant to be a little bit cheeky. But certainly the reason I came around to, you know, the term Good Samaritan donation instead of altruistic donation is that it reminds you, I mean, you know, again, I'm not like a Bible study teacher or anything, but the basic outline of the story of the Good Samaritan, the parable of the Good Samaritan, is that there's, you know, a man lying on the side of the road who's been beaten by robbers and beaten, you know, he's beaten to within an inch of his life and he's lying there dying. And along on the road comes three people. The first person is a priest and they just keep going. And the second person is a lawyer, which at that time would have been seen as like a, you know, government official kind of person. And they kept going. And the third person was a Samaritan. And a Samaritan, it's just like a different ethnic group. It's like, oh, he's from Samaria down the road. And Samaria down the road, Jesus would have been telling this story knowing that the Samaritans down the road were like the looked down upon, you know, kind of religious other with a different culture. It was like a little bit of like the enemy of the people of Israel or Jerusalem or whatever. And so anyway, so the Samaritan stops and helps the man. And Jesus tells this story to to the people listening to him in this parable. And he says, okay, so who in that story was the neighbor to the man on the road? And of course you say, well, the Samaritan was. And he says, go now and do likewise. And he's asking you to think about who is your neighbor. And the reason that this is such an important part of this film for me is that there isn't an answer. It's the same question, not why should I give my kidney, but why shouldn't I? It's like, who is my neighbor? Who is it that I owe any sense of obligation or care to? And it's the reason that it is so important, and even though I'm not a religious person, I'm like just basically an atheist with no education on religious matters. But for me, it became so important because I was trying to put my story in perspective, and the science story, you know, the story of how my amygdala is big or small or whatever, didn't do anything to help me understand the impulses that were driving me at all. The thing that helped me understood it was that this is a question that every major world religion has wrestled with. The problem of the stranger, call it the golden rule. There's some version of that in every major world religion. It's a vexing problem that we all face. I didn't solve it. But that's not surprising because no one has solved it. There's no solving it. It's an everyday question that we ask ourselves in new, fresh ways all the time. You know, the future of kidney donation appears to be using pigs, like genetically modified pigs, to grow organs that can be used to save people's lives, which sounds great. I mean, that's probably better than asking other people to do it. But I'm like, but what about these pigs, man? Like,
yeah.
They didn't ask to give a kidney, you know. Are we at least going to give them a good life in a farm? I doubt it. We're probably just going to kill them and throw them away, which I think is so sad. So, you know, the who is your neighbor question for me, you know, I think is in a contemporary sense quite a bit larger than, like, you know, is it other human beings? There's other creatures we need to be thinking about too.
Let me ask you one more thing. I think when things like this come up, there's always that question of, is your motive for doing this good enough? Is it if it's not pure, is it good enough? And when you think about trying to preserve or explain, not perfect, but preserve this motive for why you did this thing, did making a film about it change the experience, influence, impact how you felt?
Oh, it definitely changed the experience. I've kind of alluded to before. I think, you know, a normal, healthy way to go about your life is not to obsessively focus on every negative feeling.
Yeah.
But I felt that that was what I needed to do to be truthful to the film. I think it really made the experience a lot worse for me. Ultimately, to be honest with you, I think making the film was a bigger sacrifice than giving the kidney. I think it was harder. I think it took longer. It took a lot more out of me to make the film than it did to give the kidney. But the real question that you're asking is about motives. And it's so important because it's exactly what I was saying earlier. Our kidney donation system is based on altruism. So when you go in for your psychosocial evaluation, they're asking you questions about why you're doing this. And they're listening for reasons that we consider good enough, as you said. If you go in to a typical transplant center and you say, I kind of hate myself, actually. I think my life is terrible. I've done nothing. I'm a piece of crap. And I want to give a kidney because maybe it'll help me like myself. They'll probably turn you down. That's not considered a good enough reason. The good enough reason is, oh, I heard I could save someone's life and I thought, why not? Like, that's, you know, if you get into it and you try to, like, you know, sort of say, I'm trying to repair a hole in my heart, you know, those are red flags. Like I said earlier, too, like, I don't think we know why we do what we do anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, to the extent possible, like, we have to kind of, like, find ways to frame this as a good enough reason. I actually don't think it's that bad of a reason to say, well, maybe I've not done a lot of good in my life, and this seems like something I could, you know, to do. Like, I think that's a pretty good start, actually. Anyway, so yeah, the motives are very important, but also I find the whole thing kind of offensive. I'm just kind of like, you know, there's like a bunch of billionaires running around, and like they give a lot of money and they get a building named after them, and like, does people spend a lot of time like questioning their motives for that? It's like, come on, like, let's accept that people do good things for complicated reasons and not even necessarily reasons that you would like. Like, I didn't do it for the film. That's not why I did it. But I also just want to say, even if I did, I don't think that that should like somehow make the act itself less altruistic or less good in some basic sense, you know? I just don't. I really think we should probably get out of the realm of trying to police people's motives for doing good things and just be grateful they did them.
Penny Lane, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Penny Lane. Her film is called Confessions of a Good Samaritan, and you can join us for a screening next week, next Wednesday night, at the Utah Film Center in the Marmalade District of Salt Lake City. Penny is going to be there in person, so she can answer your questions about the film or about donating your kidney to a stranger. The screening is free, but you're going to need to RSVP, and if you do RSVP, please show up. We have details at radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Instagram at Radio West. We're on YouTube at KUER 90.1. You can email us at radiowest.org. Our intern is Aidan Oneida, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. I'm Doug Fabrizio.